This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Welcome to the HEAL Podcast. I'm Kelly Noonan-Gorris, and every week I speak to the leading doctors, healers, spiritual teachers, and scientists to find out what is truly possible when it comes to healing. I also interview real people with extraordinary healing stories. My philosophy is, what's possible for one is possible for all. And I've discovered on my journey that so much more is possible than we can begin to imagine. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Heal with Kelly, formerly known as the Heal Podcast. But as you know, today is the new day, the new launch, the new platform brand. So welcome. Thank you all for tuning in. I am so excited to welcome my guest today, Rebecca Tickle. No, I said it wrong. Tickle. I practiced it literally three times.
You know, when I met my husband, I was like, oh, you're Mr. Tickle. Ha, ha, ha. Like, I knew it was Tickle, but I made fun of him. He was like, And now I'm Mrs. Tickle. So that the laugh was on me, obviously.
I mean, it is kind of a, like it's so cute. And I was like, Tickle, Tickle, Tickle. And then I say it wrong, Tickle. But yes, Rebecca Tickle. Yeah. And she is, along with her husband, Josh, who could not be with us here today, the director and producer of the new amazing documentary, Common Ground, which is the follow-up to Kiss the Ground. And we are here to talk about her mission, her activism, her filmmaking, and the why of it all, and regenerative ag, and saving the soil to save our planet, our health, and life on Earth as we know it, really. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously Kiss the Ground, massive success. And did you direct and produce that as well, or that was based on the book that your husband wrote?
He wrote the book while we were making the film. Because there's so much information. I mean, we learned so much. It was an eye-opening experience after a decade of being sort of paralyzed by climate anxiety to come into this understanding that we can regenerate soil and sequester all of the carbon we've emitted and stabilize the climate was overwhelming. And so as we made Kiss the Ground, which was a 7-year endeavor, he would write chapters based on the interviews that we were doing and a lot of content that didn't end up in the film. But he and I, along with our writer, Johnny O'Hara, wrote it, and then Josh and I together directed and produced it. And then same with Common Ground, which is the follow-up to Kiss the Ground, and we wrote and directed and produced that together as well.
Amazing. Yeah. I always admire the couple that works together so closely and has the same mission. It's such a beautiful thing to be able to do that and work so well together, because Kiss the Ground, phenomenal success. And now Common Ground is looking to be, you know, that successful, if not more so. So tell us, why did you want to make a follow-up documentary, and how is Common Ground different? What is the mission of Common Ground?
Common Ground is very different from Kiss the Ground. You can watch Common Ground, never have seen a single minute of Kiss the Ground, and you won't have missed anything. They're both standalone films, but they're so sort of simpatico to one another as well. So if you watch Kiss the Ground and then watch Common Ground, it makes a lot of sense. But Kiss the Ground is a really, it's an inspiring film that sort of corrects this narrative that we're doomed. And it teaches people that we have this thing called the carbon cycle, and through biosequestration and building soil, we can sequester all of the teraton of carbon that we've emitted, and we can stabilize the climate. It's kind of an introduction to that. Common Ground, it pulls back the curtain on what keeps us from making that transition to regeneration, what's holding us back from ultimately taking the steps that we critically, urgently must take in order to save ourselves and course correct. It shows farmers who are doing regeneration at scale and how they've overcome the initial hardships. And it really connects climate, health, and farming, agriculture, as these three inextricable things where you can't have any one of them thrive without the other two thriving. They're all connected. And ultimately, it's a call to action, and it shows how we can fix our, some people say we have a broken food system that needs to be fixed. Some people say we have a system that's working exactly the way that it was intended and it needs to be broken. So whichever camp you fit into, this film shows how we can make that transition and begin to regenerate in North America. And our goal with the film is to regenerate 100 million acres in North America.
Wow, that's amazing. Which is, I think, like 10%. Right.
It's approximately 10%. It's what we believe would be sort of Malcolm Gladwell's theory of 10% as being the tipping point. And we believe that that's true, that once we get 10% of U.S. agriculture into regeneration, that it will be an unstoppable force that quickly transitions, because there's no comparison between conventional and regenerative agriculture. There's just none. The benefits to the farmer, their families, their economy, their own personal income, their debt, their stress, their quality of life, the nutrient density of the food that they're growing, the health not only of the people who are eating the food, but the health of the people who are handling the food, and ultimately the health of the entire ecosystem where that food is grown. You can have a small water cycle that is either regenerated or degenerated by how those farming practices are managed. So it really is like the secret sauce to having life thrive on Earth. And that's what Common Ground shows.
And it really does. And it shows it so beautifully and so simply that you're just like, how is it even legal to have the conventional farming system that is so clearly not sustainable, so poisonous to the farmers and so detrimental to their health, you know, whether it's financial health or physical health, mental health for sure. And you can make the transition relatively quickly, but under the pressures of the current system, there's such slim margins. I mean, every farmer that I know is in debt. It's like a real struggle. So to make that switch over to regeneration, like a regenerative farming ag, is it like makes so much sense. You show examples of farmers who have done it and done it successfully, but it is still, why do you feel that it's such a slow moving shift for a lot of farmers? It is. I was just on a farm in New Zealand for a week, and they're in the middle of switching over to regeneration, regenerative farming practices, and they do wool, and so they're cattle and sheep. And, you know, he's very successful and is showing the success and how it saves money and, you know, how it's good for the whole ecosystem, including the humans that work on the farm. I said, what is the biggest barrier to people making the switch? And it's just such a big, you know, there's such slim margins, whether it's dependent on the weather or the climate, like that risk for farmers to make that switch. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, I mean, that's accurate. There is a risk when it's scary for farmers, especially in the US, who are, you know, basically only able to continue doing business that way because of the subsidies, you know, the crop insurance, the bank loans that stipulate that they have to spray. And so to get off of that and to do something that you've never done before, when you're already like so close to bankruptcy and it's already, you know, a high risk venture, That is enough right there to stop people in their tracks from making that transition. But the farmers who are making the transition, you know, because while we wait for our government to sort of catch up and helping farmers to do the right thing versus subsidizing them to do the wrong thing, there are farmers who are taking the risk, and over 80% of them within the first year making a profit, you know, way more than they were before. So, you know, it's kind of like having some blind faith in that the legend is true, that if you create biodiversity and you build healthy soil, that it then, you know, you'll reap in the benefits. But because we're talking about nature, and we're talking about degraded soil, and, you know, we're already in a high stress environmental crisis where we're all experiencing these weather events that we haven't seen before. You know, I come from a legacy farming family, and in my family, you know, you couldn't talk about climate change, but you could talk about the weather. And that's something that's consistent. So it doesn't matter what your political views are. It doesn't matter what you think about climate change or not. Farmers recognize that they affect their environment, and they can see the changes that happen around them based on how they're farming. They see the soil blowing away, you know, which it has them have to pay for more inputs. And, you know, the costs go up, the cost of the inputs go up, the profits continue to become decreased. It's just, you know, we have a farmer suicide epidemic in the US where their farmers are 5 times more likely to commit suicide than any other profession in the United States. And not to mention the financial pressure, not to mention that for many of these legacy farming families, this land has been in their families for generations, and it's a source of pride. And, you know, it's just literally bringing farmers to their knees, and they're only getting 8 cents on the dollar for the produce that they're selling. You know, that's a crime. This would be, hold up farmers like, this is our heritage and this is our American values. You know, you think of the farmer as like as the thing that we celebrate here and that we honor. But the truth is that we're treating our farmers like dirt. Mm-hmm. And what we're getting as a result is food that's grown in dirt, that is devoid of nutrition. And that not only is it devoid of nutrition, but then you combine that with chronic exposure to neurotoxins, whether it's through exposure environmentally through the air, because you're a farmer who lives in the field, that's going to affect your mental health. It's going to affect your gut health. You know, we talk about our gut as it being our intuition and our guide. You know, I'm listening to my gut. It's because there's life in our gut that we literally are listening to. It really is our intuition. And I know I live in Ojai, and this is kind of like thought of as kind of a woo-woo thing, but this is science actually that we're talking about. And when we start to degrade the life that's inside of our body, the same way that we're degrading the life that's in our soil, and then the nutrition goes away, then yes, mental health becomes an issue. And it's ubiquitous in the United States because we're all not getting the same type of nutrition that we could be if we were farming in these regenerative ways. And then not to mention like the big crisis, which is the climate crisis. And that's something that affects us all. So, you know, you take this, you know, suicide epidemic, a health crisis, and then you add to that like impending doom unless we transition to regeneration. You know, you've got pretty high stakes and the farmers are feeling that pressure. And then these farmers have gone to land grant universities. Many of them are very well educated. They went to school. They learned from the top schools and universities how to farm. But the thing is, that information was corrupted because so many of these institutions, the majority of their funding comes from the companies that are profiting from the sale of these chemicals that keep them locked into this conventional cycle. And so that's a form of indoctrination when you have, you know, generations of people being told that the only way that you can feed the world is to grow a monocrop, like one thing only, and to do it propped up with chemical inputs that they're going to sell you. And then, oh, by the way, also these seeds, if you buy them, you know, they're Roundup ready. But then you lose control even of your own seeds. You know, you can't even like plant a seed that's grown from your plant. You know, it's just like slowly disconnecting from the natural process, mm-hmm. and becoming dependent on this system propped up by chemicals. And then the science has been corrupted by the same companies that have been putting this information into our land grant universities. And we have many whistleblowers in Common Ground who talk about their experiences in being suppressed from asking questions when it comes to whether these chemicals were safe or not. And it's been quite eye-opening to learn, and disheartening to learn about the lack of safety, that actually the lack of true, protection and the protocol to make sure that the food that's being sprayed with these chemicals is safe for us to eat, because unfortunately, even our political system has been corrupted by the companies that are making a profit. And so the film really spells out how that system works or doesn't work, as the case actually is. And then what we can do to get empowered to not only encourage the people that we buy our food from, because our money is power, to make the transition to regeneration, but also to inspire, not just a whole new industry around regeneration, but also people to become farmers. Like, you've got over 80% of farmers who are phasing out of farming. And what a great opportunity for young people who see the power and the possibility of regeneration and everything that it stands for, to come in and to learn these new ways and yet also old ways, because we're talking about indigenous agriculture and indigenous wisdom and a way of working within our managed landscape to create food forests all around us, wherever we are. And that's what Common Ground talks about. It talks, it goes into racism, the USDA, we talk about indigenous agriculture. We shine a light on where a lot of these regenerative practices come from. Mm-hmm. So I really love Common Ground. Coming from a farming family, having witnessed firsthand the impact of exposure to these chemicals generation after generation, and the costs that people who are in these families pay, for me, this is a really important film, not only for me personally, but also for my kids, and that we need to get this message out to as many people as possible so that we can make the course correction that we need to make right now.
Truly, really powerful. Every, when I was watching the film and as you were just talking, about the system, the conventional system and how it's set up, and the education that is actually funded by these big ag and chemical companies, it's the exact same model. You just put it in the medical and big pharma system. So big pharma is, funding the majority of the higher education learning that trains our doctors. And so there is an indoctrination of, again, like, I don't know that it's some evil intention, but it's everybody in their micro fear-based decisions on their own personal security that they're just blinders on in this system. And like, even, just people that work at these big chemical companies or these pharmaceutical companies, and, some of them wake up and become whistleblowers, and some of them are just head down convincing themselves that they're doing good because that's the indoctrination that they're getting from top down. And it's just mind blowing to me, like, doctors are, overworked, and the system that they're in right now, they can't possibly truly care for their patients. They just have to give them immediate relief through their, by relieving a symptom, usually with pharmaceutical or an intervention of some sort. And it's just the same exact metaphors. We've gone away from nature. We've completely disrupted this holistic where everything is connected and everybody is just me, 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 profit, 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 short term, short sighted. But it's mind blowing to me that the people running these companies, they're looking at, oh, what a great profit cycle. I create this chemical that we spray on crops that then causes lymphoma. And then I also create within the same corporation the drug that heals or cures lymphoma. Like, what a great business model. But, like, guys, glyphosate and all these chemicals are ubiquitous in that you're killing yourselves while you're killing other people. It's so mind-blowing to me that they can't see the forest through the trees or whatever that saying is. We're killing ourselves in the earth based on, I don't know. It's mind blowing to me. I just don't understand how it even works.
Well, it's that cognitive dissonance. It's like, we don't want to believe that we've been hurting ourselves or others. We want to believe that we're doing good. So, even I used to be an actress, and when I would play the bad guy, you never play the bad guy like the bad guy. The bad guy never thinks that they're the bad guy. bad guy always thinks that they're on some crusade for justice or for something right, even if it's completely, you know, it's just usually really misinformed. And that's what we're dealing with here, is misinformation around a critically important issue, which is called, you know, feeding the world / climate change. I mean, let's just, feeding the world doesn't exist through that model. You cannot feed the world through a conventional model. That is a complete myth. But I guarantee you, the people that are working at these companies who are making these chemicals, that's what they believe. You know, they really do believe that that's the only way to do it. So I don't have any, you know, blame or judgment around that. I think, you know, and the farmers that I've talked to who spray chemicals are like, you know, don't take the Roundup for my cold dead hands. I mean, literally, that's the mentality. You know, they're going to go down with the glyphosate. And, you know, that thinking, I think, is part of just like wanting to believe so badly that their life has served a purpose of doing good, yeah. You know, and it's hard to face that maybe the way that I'm doing this is harmful. That's a really, especially people have started, you know, and I come from a farm family, so I can say this, farmers are a bit stubborn, you know? So it's you know, my dad, for instance, we started making films about farming, and he's a farm, you know, come from a farming family. He started driving the plow when he was 11. And he was like, why are you making these movies about farming? Like, you're not going to tell me what to do. You know, he's loves to till. He loves to spray. And he read Josh's book. He watched our films. He's actually even in Common Ground. If you watch the film Common Ground, there's this really old, sort of sickly looking farmer who goes to take out a bank loan. That's my dad. That's my actual dad. And
cameo.
Exactly. I'm like, use it if you've got it. I'm like, I've got the perfect person for this. And then he never said to me, like, you know, you're right. You know, regenerative agriculture is the way to go, or these chemicals are bad. He never said that. But what he did do is he started sending me photos of his organic produce that he started growing, his regenerative organic produce. So I think farmers, you know, we're not going to get that big, aha, you were right, I was wrong, this is the way to do it. That's never going to happen. But what is going to happen is, and I'm seeing this here in Ventura County where we live, which is a major agricultural exporter for the United States. And as a state, like, we produce a ton of America's food. And we're paying the price here in California through desertification. And so I've been having these conversations with my neighbors. And so it's, you know, really, I really see how these conversations go and how sometimes they don't go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, not a lot of, oh, you're right, but I'm starting to see cover crops. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to see biodiversity. I'm starting to see a newfound awareness of nature that was missing before when we first moved here. So it is, it's like inch by inch and acre by acre, people want to do the right thing. And I think if they get the knowledge and they get the information, even the most stubborn person is going to start taking those steps, because that's why we called the film Common Ground. I mean, this is our common ground. We're all in this together. And even the farmers that we think are, you know, the bad guy, they're not the bad guy. You know, and they may not want to listen at first, but with enough conversation, there is movement. But I think the biggest shift is going to be with new farmers coming in with an open mind, with a basic understanding of regeneration and a real keenness to figure it out, because it takes that kind of innovation to do it. That's one of the principles of regeneration, is to farm in context. That's one of the practices. So you're not going to farm the same way in California that you're going to farm in Arizona or Indiana or Vermont. It's going to look differently. So you have to figure out, you know, it's kind of like a mystery. Like, what does this soil need? What is this environment calling for? What would naturally, abundantly grow here? And how can I mimic that and support that? And that's the kind of thinking that is going to bring in regeneration at the scale that we need it to.
It's very simply back to nature. And, you know, my dear friend Zach Bush is like, we've written ourselves out of the definition of nature. And just, if you are lucky enough to be in nature a lot and you witness nature, nature left on its own devices always is self-healing, self-regulating, self-regenerating. And So what we've done is we've written ourselves out of nature, not realizing we are deeply interconnected with the soil and the microorganisms. And obviously we are more microorganism cells than human cells, you know? So like we are in nature and nature is so intelligent and perfectly self-healing. We've, you know, with our big minds and our big evolutionary egos, like have gotten in the way with technology. But if we can go back to nature in these ancient indigenous ways that we're in, you know, symbiosis and in harmony with nature, because we are nature, then the planet starts to thrive. And like you said, the ecosystems and the weather systems start to self-regulate and calm. And it's amazing. You just show like such promising, where you look at this desert of Chihuahua, Mexico, that goes up into, you know, parts of the Southwest of America and the United States. And it's this like baked, you know, sand-like soil that's like just dead, you know, everybody would just think it's dead, not able to grow or be fertile. And it's just so cool to, with the managed grazing of animals, whether it's like goats and sheep and cattle, it can, just with the dung, you know, and the stomping and breaking up the soil, and then all of a sudden it comes back to life, and there's these cover crops and this biodiversity that happens, and it's just like so beautiful and so hopeful, like nothing is beyond repair. And I think there was I wrote a ton of notes, but it was something about the like nature stored the seeds waiting for the right conditions to arrive. It's like those seeds are in there, baked in, and they just needed the right conditions with the farmer in tune, or the rancher in tune with nature, to go back to how, you know, ancient herds used to graze and work, you know, in conjunction with the soil. It's just mind-blowing to me. We just have to get back to nature in all areas of life. Our systems have taken us out of nature, and we need to just break these systems, get back to nature, and then use these brilliant technologies in, you know, to complement and to boost, but not to destroy and separate and disconnect.
Yes, you know, this story in the Chihuahuan Desert, we feature Alejandro Carrillo, and he talks about how they've taken this huge swath of land and they've regenerated it through grazing cattle, but we didn't end up including it in the film. What you do see in the film is that there's rain that's been brought back to life, and there's 7-foot tall grasses, and it's all biodiverse. And the secret to how they did it was they had over 200 families take down their fences. And I just think that there's such a metaphor in that, because once they took down their fences and they merged their cattle together, they were able to increase the carrying capacity of the land. So basically, when you think back on like old herds of bison, you would like hear the thunder, because they travel in huge, huge packs, not like a little here and a little there, not all spread out. That is degenerative. That is a model where people are like, oh, you can't have biodiversity and have cows. Yes, you can. A lot of what people think of when it comes to managing ruminants is, you know, putting them in a paddock somewhere and letting them graze. But that's not how nature works. You can't fence them into a small place, and you're just doing more of the conventional CAFO model, a concentrated animal feed operation, where you have a lot of suffering and you have degeneration, and you're going to have, you know, the greenhouse gas emissions versus drawdown. But with, you know, you can do it in a way that mimics nature with ruminants. You put them all together in tight, tight herds, and then they move. They're never stopping in one place for too long. They're never going to be able to eat away all of that grass all the way down to the root. But what they are going to do is disturb it enough that it's going to stimulate growth of the roots. So they're going to grow deeper, and that plant is going to become more resilient. And while the cow is there, it's going to defecate and urinate on it. So it's going to fertilize it, and it's going to water it. It's going to, like you talked about, the seeds that were there waiting to come back to life. Their hooves will break up that hard pack, and then those seeds are going to be exposed to these conditions. And then the cows are going to be moved on like they would as if they were running away from wolves chasing them, or whatever the predator in that environment is. And so they did this in the Chihuahuan Desert, and they took down their fences and they worked together inside of their community. And then they regenerated the desert, and now they have rainfall and they have abundance where before they had poverty, and they had have community where they had separation. And I just think this imagery of these fences coming down, it really embodies the essence of what regeneration is, because you don't have regeneration inside of isolation. It's not a me versus you. It's a we environment. It's one where we're all connected to each other. We're all connected to nature. We're connected to animals. And we're working together. It's not about me having more than you. It's about there's enough for everyone. And it's just about moving the resources around to where they're necessary. Yeah. And I really believe that this is how we turn it around for humanity. If we start looking at our species and our presence here on this earth like that, like there's enough resources for everyone. And if we work together, we can move these resources around to where they need to be. And that's how we feed the world. You know, it's not one person sitting somewhere with a linear conveyor belt churning and extracting and then sending it using fossil fuels all around the world. That's not a model that works. Model that works is communities coming together, taking down their fences and figuring out how to work together to build soil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the food system, it's, you know, it starts with, it's so beautiful, the taking down the fences. And it is like, I feel like, you know, the isolation of COVID has now, you know, regenerated this, everybody's need for community, like hype, you know, like we really need connection. We realize the detriment of isolation and just like the, you know, the, how do you say, the direct proportion to death and disease, yes, the more you're isolated. And so, you know, and then also like the centralized systems are clearly not working, like back to, it's just back to nature, local, in season, you know, the biodiversity for the ecosystem, the local ecosystem. Like, it just seems so simple. We got to go back to, there's got to be just the way where we go back to nature, but then figure out the best ways to utilize modern technology in beneficial ways, not destructive ways. You know, let's do the best of both worlds in a more balanced capacity.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
That's it. You know, and like a farmer, you know, they'll sit in their tractor all day long. They'll get up before the sun rises and then they'll come in after it's set, just out there plowing or spraying or, you know, seeding, whatever it is that's like on deck for that day. But that's a very isolating. It's ironic that you're a farmer, but you're never actually touching nature and you're not actually seeing any other person. You know, there's something wrong with that picture.
Again, the mental health and the suicide, you know, there's the chemical aspect, there's the stress aspect, and then there's the isolation aspect, you know? So I love that idea of community coming together and compiling resources to, you know, high tide lifts all boats.
And it's like regeneration in soil, you know, like I love learning about like the magic and wonders of soil. You know, if you have a tree over here, you know, and then you have a tree over there and you have a strong mycelium network, that tree is going to send resources, you know, through the ground to that other tree. I mean, that's the power of nature when it's functioning properly. And it works the same thing. It's the same way for people.
Totally. And I think it was Rick who, you know, that just use again, technology. It's like, by the way, the whole tilling thing is mind blowing. You think it works, but then you see this conventional soil, it blows off in the wind. There's no cover crop. There's no topsoil. There's no integrity to the soil. It's not alive. It's dead. And the tilling actually breaks up this mycelium network and the only chance for flourishing. Yet we just still do it like mindlessly. It's wild to me. But yeah. And then I love when Rick was showing the roller crimper in lieu of, so it's, again, it's this technological vehicle and farm, you know, equipment that in lieu of spraying chemical weed killer, it mashes down so that the weeds can't grow. But, and then there's cover crop. It's just like there are, we can use technology and that is harmonious and symbiotic with nature as well. It's mm-hmm. like, you know,
I love Rick and Kel Clark. Their story is amazing. They were conventional farmers, and one year, his family got sick, and Carol got cancer. And they connected the dots, and they realized that maybe the way they were farming was affecting their health. And so Rick, and he also noticed that there was like no infiltration. Whenever it would rain, basically his entire field would just run off right into the ditch, and it was costing him a lot of money, and there was no profit in that. And so he started planting cover crops, and that year it was like his number one seller. Like that field did better than anything else. He couldn't believe it. And then he knew he was onto something. And now he's a regenerative organic farmer in Indiana. And he and Carol have proven that not only does a regenerative organic model work, but that you can make a real profit from it. I could not be happier. There's like not two nicer people on this earth that deserve to be able to reap the benefits of this. And I'm so grateful to him because he goes to DC and he talks about it, and he's a Republican, and he, you know, he just does a great job of like, you know, not all of his neighbors love him, you know, it's yes. takes some courage yes. and yes. some bravery. Yeah. To say, hey guys, the way we've been doing this, we have it backwards, and there's this other way. And so people like Rick and Carol, I really respect them because, you know, for them, it's part of their faith. They believe it's their purpose, you know, their God-given purpose on this earth to be good stewards of the land. And they take that very seriously. And they feel that regeneration is a part of that, as does Gabe Brown. And I think that that's so beautiful because I think we all have different access points for what brings us to this, you know, and that really is the common ground. And some of us come to it for climate. Some of us come to it because they can just, you just know it's the right thing to do. Some of us come to it because of our health. But, you know, at the end of the day, it makes for unlikely partners, because when people start to see how much we actually have in common versus how different we are, it's amazing how quickly people can take action together.
Yeah,
that would never have done that before.
So beautiful. And to see them on camera and like to see, you know, and she obviously healed mm-hmm. that, like I was just in New Zealand, and this call him Sam the Bushman, I think Sam the Trap Man on Instagram, I want to give him a shout out, but he, you know, he's so in nature and educated in the bush and the indigenous ways, and so he knows how like the mingi plant like protects the lizards from this bird, and it's also ground cover, and it's like how it's all intertwined and this vast knowledge. And if you look at him, because he's out in the bush all day and just like hands in the dirt and in these natural environments, he's just like the exuberance of a child. So when you are with biodiversity and you see these paddocks of like these tall grasses and all of these different diverse, you know, crops for, you know, animal grazing and everything else, you can't help but feel the joy, because that is a frequency that nature intended. That's like us in harmony with our true nature as well. So you see that in people and farmers like Rick, and where I was in New Zealand, and it's just so cool. And I wish that for all, I wish that experience, because I think you said a statistic in the film where like 85% of farmers don't even put their hands in the dirt. And why would they? Because it's this conventional system doesn't make it attractive and the frequency is low, you know? It's really sad. Pardon the interruption, dear listeners, but I want to take a moment to thank our awesome sponsor, Puri, the potent and pure supplement line from Europe that is now available in the US. Guys, I love the United States, but when it comes to health, I definitely tend to trust clean European brands more than American ones because the restrictions on contaminants allowed in food and products are much more strict in Europe. That's why I'm stoked that Puri is now available in the US. Puri's philosophy is pure origin, potency, and peace of mind. I've been loving their beauty powder, or CP3, which contains collagen, biotin, hyaluronic acid, zinc, vitamin C, and B6. It's true beauty from the inside out. It's all the good stuff I need to keep my skin healthy, my nails strong, and my hair growing strong. I also love their O3, or their ultra pure fish oil. Because fish is so high in mercury these days, I feel safer getting my omega-3 on the regular from Puri to keep my brain sharp, my vision strong, and my heart optimal. Their bourbon vanilla whey protein powder is quite delicious too. They believe in full transparency with all their products. Each batch is third-party tested by the Clean Label Project, an IFOS, against more than 200 contaminants, heavy metals, pesticides, glyphosate, dioxins, and bisphenols. Sadly, many protein powders available on store shelves have many hidden contaminants, especially heavy metals in them. Don't just take my word. With Puri, you can find the actual data behind every batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand you can trust. Right now, Puri is offering my listeners 20% off their O3 Ultra Pure Fish Oil and all of their other great products. Go to my special URL, puri.com/heal, and use my promo code HEAL. This even applies to the already discounted subscriptions. You'll get almost a third off the price. Go to puri.com/HEAL. Don't wait. Use promo code HEAL at puri.com/HEAL.
It's kind of a side topic. We made another film called The Earthing Movie. And that film is all about how we're electrical. You know, we have our bodies are electrical. We have our hearts beating. And when we touch the earth, we actually get an electron charge from the earth and it fills our body with these electrons. And those electrons then thin our blood viscosity and reverses inflammation in our body. So we are made to be connected to the earth. They've done all these peer-reviewed scientific studies on this. They've done tests on babies in the NICU and shown that the vagal tones of the babies who were getting that electron charge from the earth versus like who are on earthing pads versus the ones that weren't, their vagal tones were improved almost 100%, whereas the other ones were unchanged. And babies don't know the difference of getting that electron charge, but our bodies do. And when you touch the ground, part of that happiness that you feel is you're getting that charge from the earth. It reverses inflammation, your mental health heals, your cortisol levels go down. When we take care of the earth takes care of us. You know, it's absolutely vital for us that every day we actually touch the earth and we get our hands into the soil. Growing food and gardening is a really great access to that. You know, they call people tree huggers, you know, but people who actually touch trees, you feel good. You know, when you put your feet on the grass, you feel good. When you put your hands in the dirt and you get that dirty, it's not just like, oh, this is so pretty and I feel good. There's actually a chemistry to it. Mm-hmm. It's that charge that you get from the earth that literally brings you back to life and can heal your body. So a little shout out to our movie, The Earthing Movie. It's on YouTube. But you know, I firmly believe that when we take care of the earth, that the earth takes care of us. And it's a reciprocal relationship.
Yeah. We are, 'cause we're part of nature and just like mycelium and fungi, like, degenerates fallen trees. And it's just like all when we go back to the earth eventually. Right. So, and I love earthing. When I was pregnant every day, I put my bare feet in the earth and it's a game changer.
It is.
And I can't help but think like the chemical, you know, conventional farming model is very similar to the poison cut burn model of cancer. And cancer is just rising and exploding everywhere, very sadly. It was when I made Heal, and now 6.5 years later, like, or 7 years later, since I started making it, it's just on the rise even more exponentially, which is obviously due to some of these chemicals and et cetera. But I just see that shift. It's like more and more people are waking up. Like I just interviewed a woman who healed in 2 years, stage 4 aggressive breast cancer, HER2 breast cancer that ended up going to her brain. So post-surgery and removing, then it went to the lymph node and then they found a spot in her brain. And then she had surgery. And so now she's got, you know, radical remission, and she did only holistic because that's what her intuition said. So really, you know, through connection with nature, et cetera, you know, but the conventional model is kill, kill, kill with chemo, with big chemicals, right? And I don't, you know, again, I'm not here to judge which path, because I know very wonderful, well-meaning oncologists and people that do believe that that is the way to survive, you know, and, but I just can't, like, to be, you know, if she had gone conventional, like her best case scenario is 2 to 5 years, you know, she did holistic and now she is like in, you know, radically remissed or whatever, and like there's no evidence of disease. So all of that to say is just like, I just, you know, whether even if you do integrative and you do part conventional, part, like we have to go back to nature and address our lives, our societal structure, our community, in this holistic manner, knowing that everything is interconnected. And if we are going to, you know, do Western medicine because that's what we believe in, and I encourage that, you should do whatever your strongest belief is in, and which is probably why some of these farmers are stubborn, because it's like they have generations of people that before them doing it this way, you know, and they just, this is the way they do it. So it's hard to change and pop out of that system. And so you should, I just think that, I don't know, I just, it starts with awareness. So that's why I'm so grateful for this film, because it does, and more examples of success, like this woman that I interviewed, like Rick, and I guess Carol, is that her name?
Yeah, Carol. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Like,
you know, we just need these shining examples of people that took the risk through the fear, through the criticism of neighbors or doctors or whoever, and they did it anyway. They followed their gut. Yes. And are flourishing as a result.
I think that there is a time and a place for allopathic medicine. There's no question about that. You know, I mean, I had a terrible ear infection when I was in Mexico. They gave me antibiotic eardrops, you know, saved me. Thank God.
Yeah.
You know, my husband had a tumor that he went through and they were able to remove that. Now he's like a bionic man with a titanium leg. Thank God, you know, thank God for Western medicine.
Yeah.
But the problem becomes when people start to profit off of that model. And then you go to a doctor for something and they don't even really look at you. They just write you a prescription, you know, and that's when we start relying on these really specific medications that are useful in a certain context when necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start using them for everything. And then you build this immunity to it. And then you're under this chronic stress of being exposed constantly to chemicals. Our bodies are resilient. Our bodies are amazing. They're made to heal. You know, this is what you're telling, self-healing. But if you're doing it every day and you're using it every time, then you've lost that connection and you've lost that balance. And so, I mean, our bodies have the power to heal. And if with cancer, I mean, if we all can start to go down that path, we can amazingly heal ourselves. But if you get too far down the path, at some point you're going to need to bring in the hammer, you know, to treat the illness. And that's, and thank God, you know, for that when necessary.
Yeah.
But I think people often put a lot of trust into these institutions, thinking that they are going to keep us safe. And we need to believe that. Like when we're in those emergency moments, you know, you want to trust that the people whose your life is in their hands, that they're going to bring you back. But when we get lazy and we start to just treat symptoms, and we forget that like every time we eat, like our food is our medicine and our medicine is our food, and we stop actually touching the earth and we lose that electron charge that we need from the earth, and like just all of these things add up. And that resiliency over time, if it's every single day you're getting hammered with chemicals and you're not getting, you know, refilled, you're not getting that electron charge, you're not getting nutrition that you need, you're ultimately going to slip. There's no avoid, there's no drug that can just fix that. You know, that is the issue there isn't the cancer. The issue there is the conditions that led to that. And so if we can learn how to create conditions that are for wellness and for healing and for regeneration, then we're all going to become compost one day, but hopefully it will be much later than sooner.
And hopefully our compost is a little more nutrition packed than the alternative.
Yeah. I'm going to make great compost one day. 100% regenerative organic.
I love the group in your film that's, I think it was like the Good Neighbor Gardens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, and this is what I was trying to explain about the cancer thing. It's like, I really do believe we're in this transition time where there is more information available, but we have such a strong belief that cancer equals death, and that, and then chemo has generally been the way, you know, for the last 100 years or 80 years, we treat it. And so there's just, you know, that fear drives us into the system and people lose track of the bigger picture. So that system, and that system has saved lives, especially if you believe in that system. But we can switch our beliefs in possibility when we raise awareness, when we educate, when we inform, when we share the stories of the Rick and the Carols, you know, now talking about regenerative farming and healing, healing the land, healing our families, healing ourselves. And like the Good Neighbor Gardens, you know, we have to, people don't think about it, but like if you're eating out of a bag or a box, those foods are packed with chemicals and preservatives in order to make them crunchy or to last longer on a shelf. That is not food. That is not food that is from nature anymore. That is modified food that our body doesn't recognize as food or nutrients. So it may be giving you some sort of sustenance. It certainly is not giving you health or vitality. And so to show that we can start to grow our own food and how important, just like we grow the front lawns, we all grow lawns, right? Let's grow gardens and these hyper local food systems so that we can get organic, you know, locally grown seasonal food to these, you know, communities that are just need organic and vibrant health more than anything, you know, access to those foods. And so to teach people to just grow their own little gardens, I mean, that part of the film is, to me, like, we should all, not just farmers, but every citizen should be growing a little bit of food and helping their local communities have access to organic produce.
We can all participate in the food system in our own windowsills and the planter boxes in our backyards on the little median of dirt between the sidewalk and the streets. We can turn our cities into food forests. We can turn our backyards into these beautiful, you know, oases with the biodiverse food. Like I'm constantly bringing perennial trees in, like every week. You know, it's my favorite right now because we live in California is mulberries, and my kids will go out and they'll like eat the mulberries off the trees. And it's just, there's something so amazing when you can taste food that you've just picked and you've just put it in your mouth and you took part in growing that food. It awakens something in you. It awakens this innate wisdom that we all have for how to live and how to thrive and how to be vibrant. We all have that. And when you, like you said, eat something out of a bag or a box, you know, that usually it has a picture of a vegetable on it, or it has a picture, like, you know, like potato chips, like tomato flavor or something like that. You know, and then your body sees the tomato, it needs the nutrition. Maybe it's like iron from the tomato, needs the nutrition from that, and you're craving that. So then you eat the chip and your body doesn't get the nutrition. And so it's like, oh, I'm still hungry. I need to keep eating this chip because I'm still not getting that nutrition that my body is seeking. And then you've filled up all this food, but you don't feel full. You still feel hungry because you haven't actually gotten the iron that your body is seeking from the tomato that it's craving. And then you've destroyed your palate's ability to actually taste the flavor. And they develop these flavors, like in the most, like the Dorito Effect is a great book by Mark Schatzker. He has a phenomenal way of educating people about how our flavor has been hijacked by food companies who want to sell you something in a bag or a box, and how it tricks us, our minds, into thinking that we're getting the nutrition that it's craving. But actually what we're doing is we're stripping our body of the nutrition that it needs and making ourselves sick in the process. So, you know, even just like restoring our body's ability to taste food can come back to life through growing a tomato plant or through growing some arugula in your backyard just to taste the spice of the arugula. Like my kids are like, when they eat a mulberry, they're like, oh, that one was crunchy. It probably had a bug on it. They're like, more flavor, yeah. You know, like more protein. I mean, that's our attitude. It's like, we want to taste our food. We want to eat it the way that nature intended, and you feel it. You can feel the difference. And I think every human on earth can participate in that food system, and it will bring them joy, it will bring them health, and it will ultimately bring us community. Because when you start growing food, then you want to share food, and then you find other people who are growing food, and they're probably growing a different food. So like during COVID, I was trading avocados with my neighbor for quail eggs, and you know, just moving food around. And you know, eating is a community act. You know, it's better when done together. And when you share bounty that we're all growing, I mean, that's regeneration and community.
Totally. It's getting back to these communities, and yeah, just, it's so beautiful. And that's, I mean, we have to go there. Otherwise we are sick. Our society is sick. Our climate is sick. Our bodies are sick. Our earth is sick.
That's where we're at. We're there. We're sick.
Know, we're there. So
yeah. And it's time for us to take the steps that we need to, you know, we're akin to the pre-cancer patient right now. You know, we've got like, in which direction are we going to go? Because we're not going to be able to chemically spray our way out of this.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
There's only one way out of that. And it's through getting creative, rolling up our sleeves, getting our hands dirty, and building soil.
Yeah. And doing, living in harmony and as in, with it, you know, with the intelligence and coherence of the intelligence of nature, because Mother Nature knows how to heal herself. And we just need to learn from her, and you know, the indigenous ways and the just these ancient wisdoms that have been around and survived. You know, food, let thy food be thy medicine, and the medicine be thy food, you know, thousands of years old. And oh my god,
we're either gonna get in line or she's gonna kick us off.
She's gonna kick us off. Yeah, we're exactly. Yeah, we'll end up being the cancer. We'll be the cancer. We are the cancer right now.
Let's grow some food and make it fun. You know, let's turn this crisis into a huge opportunity. You know, I had a friend, he had read this book. I don't remember what the name of the book was, but the idea was that like carbon is tree food, you know? So like, imagine if we took all that carbon from there, we put it back in the soil, like how much the trees could, like, you know, giant trees from all this carbon that we have. Like, we have an opportunity to put carbon where it needs to be to grow. Carbon isn't an enemy. Carbon is something that's incredibly, we need carbon to grow food. That's what trees grow from. It's from, you know, they breathe in carbon. So let's plant some trees and some tall grasses, and let's, you know, let's get on board and support nature to do what she knows how to do.
Exactly. So how are you helping people do that? Where can people find common ground? How can they get involved and join the mission?
People could, we're opening still theatrically. We've just right now we're opening in 75 more markets theatrically, and people can go to commongroundfilm.org. That's commongroundfilm.org, and we have the entire list of screenings there, and people can request a screening. We have big announcement coming. The film will be available globally this fall, but we just can't say who, what, how, where, when. Or I'm saying when, this fall in October. But it's very, very exciting. The film is going to be available globally in every language. And I cannot wait for people to have access to this film, because when people saw Kiss the Ground, it really did have a major role in influencing going from where we were at, which was about 3 million acres in transition to regenerative agriculture, to where we are now, which is about 32 million acres in transition. And I think when Common Ground comes out, that we're going to get up to 100 million into transition. And I invite people to watch it. There's going to be an educational version that can be shown in schools for free in September, along with a curriculum that goes along with that. There'll be a farmer version, and we're going to have a film on the farm series where farmers can show it. They can do like a tailgate party, or they can show it, like project it up outside of their barn, and they can do a screening, host it. They can educate their community using the film as a tool to show them what wonderful regeneration is already happening right there in their community and how their community can support them. Basically, we want the film to be available to as many people as possible, and for it to be a tool for them to be able to go out and, you know, do their part in regeneration. People always ask me, like, what can I do? And I think all of us have a role in it, and it's just up to each one of us to figure out what that role is. Yeah. So I invite everyone to go to commongroundfilm.org, watch the film, and find your role in regeneration.
I love it. Thank you so much. I really hope, you know, for the people that need access to, you know, cleaner, organic, more vibrant food, like get excited and amped to try to grow their own, you know, even a little bit, or start a movement in their community so they can each grow a little bit and just compile this bounty for their local community. That sounds amazing to me. And then I really just hope that the farmers who need it most, you know, find hope and support and resources and inspiration and courage to, and just really support, you know, we need to support them in any way we can. So I would just really commend you for this film and shining the light of awareness and getting this movement going and showing us all, we're all on common ground.
You know what, we're all learning from everyone. I'm learning as I'm going. I'm a farmer too. We've got our little farm here. So it's, you know, I love the biggest little farm. I can relate to that in my own way on our 5 acres here. You know, this is the movement. This is the next $1 trillion industry. This is the way that it's going. I'm so honored to get to be a person that gets to introduce some people to it. But the reality is like, it's all of our movement. And this is the way we're headed, whether we like it or not. So now is a great moment for people to jump on board.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Rebecca. And tell Josh, I hope he feels better. Good luck with the rollout. I know it's already doing amazing things. So I appreciate you and your work.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm so honored to be on your podcast with you today. And thank you to all of your listeners for listening. Really so grateful to you.
Awesome. Thank you for listening to the Heal Podcast. Be sure to tune in every Thursday for more empowering wisdom and inspiring healing stories. And make sure you hit the follow button on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss that one episode that holds the answer you've been searching for. And please rate and review us so that we can grow and reach more people. Thanks so much, and be well.